since time began. I have sailed on many seas, but these shores will always be home to me. Oh, island in the sun, willed to me by my father's hand, all my days I will sing and praise of your forest, waters, your shining sun. Surging tide. Oh, island in the sun, willed to me by my father's hand, all my days I will sing and praise of your forest, waters, your shining sun.
It's UMFM 101.5. We have some great music from the Ethnic Music Concert Series from U Multicultural with Glenn Williams. Join U Multicultural tomorrow live on Facebook and YouTube for a showcase by the fantastic crew, the Dust Rhinos. Good afternoon and welcome to UTalk. I'm your host, Ryan Funk. UTalk is a program dedicated to diversity, highlighting native-born and new Canadians' cultures and experiences. How can you share your culture with the world? In today's episode, we have two different perspectives, the writer of a satirical website, and a musician from across the sea. What is a Mennonite? Andrew Unger is the creator of The Daily Bonnet, a satirical website that breaks down Mennonite culture and life. Andrew and I explore the Plautdietsch Code, Knocking the Mystery of Mennonites.
You know, that's a really hard to give one perfect definition. I think you're right. You know, if you just Google it, if you go into Google Images and type in Mennonites, you're going to get pictures of people in, you know, women in long dresses and men wearing suspenders and horse and buggy. You get that sort of one sort of impression of what a Mennonite is. But Mennonites are as diverse as the entire population. You know, we range from the very conservative, like you'll see if you in the pictures that I just described, to, you know, completely blending in with the rest of society. I don't know if you want me to go into a whole like history of where Mennonites originated from or whatever, but
I mean, we can talk about that a little bit later. Maybe that'll feed a little bit into one of my topics. But yeah, Mennonites are incredibly diverse. I guess it's one of those things where it's kind of, it's a blanket creed, but within that, there's just so many different variations that you can find.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I suppose some of the common aspects that all people who would self-identify as Mennonite would hold would be, pacifism and adult baptism. But otherwise, you know, in terms of like theology, the rest of it is pretty wide ranging. And in terms of practice and things like that, and dress and all that stuff, it's pretty wide ranging.
I know for myself, just background-wise, when I'm looking at Mennonites and seeing other Mennonite families, family-oriented, that's a big one as well.
Yeah, you know, I was gonna say I hadn't thought of that, but that's definitely true. I was gonna say, when I was thinking about this earlier, I was thinking community-oriented is another aspect. Family and community-oriented, I think that's something that all Mennonites, from the very traditional conservative Mennonites to progressive Mennonites that live in the city, have that aspect in common, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, Mennonite culture is starting to get a little bit more, in the spotlight. I don't know if you saw the movie. I propose we don't see each other again after tonight.
Yes. Yes, I did see that. This great scene. I don't know if it's, I guess it's not a spoiler if I say it, but because it's not like crucial to the plot or anything, but there's a scene where they go to Morden, which also is a city with a high Mennonite population, and she's looking for all she knows is his parents' names are Friesen, and she looks in the phone book and it's like pages and pages of Friesens, so it doesn't help her anything.
Yeah, it's just interesting, like seeing those cultures, and I guess that's something to kind of move in right now, where, you know, when we're looking at Mennonites and some of the other cultures, there's a lot of similarities from the history. Mennonites that came from Europe, moved away, lost their land, and kind of had to start fresh. And that's something that looking at the history, we can really relate to that, to some of the refugee crisis that has happened over the past couple of years.
Oh yeah, for sure. I looked at, my own grandfather, the one side of my family came to Canada in the 1870s. So they were immigrants, not refugees, but the other side of my family, my grandfather came to Canada when he was 5 years old in the 1920s, fleeing, the aftermath of the Russian Revolution. So, he came as a refugee, and the people that stayed there, I have relatives also that stayed in the Soviet Union and, didn't get out in time, so to speak. And they were killed, executed, for no reason, or sent to Siberia. But I have great uncles that were, killed at that time. So yeah, definitely the refugee experience, we definitely have that in our Mennonite background.
Mm-hmm. That's even on my family. My grandfather, him and his sister and their mother, my great Oma, came over after World War II, after their her husband was taken away. And yeah, it's crazy just looking about the history. And I maybe that's something that some Mennonites maybe forget, that we came from this place.
Yeah, I know. You do see a lot of, I mean, I think Mennonites, maybe more than some other, I don't know, it's hard to compare to other groups, but Mennonites are definitely like sort of obsessive about their own history and genealogy. There's the whole the Mennonite game, which is like you meet another Mennonite and you try to figure out how you're related, that So I think Mennonites are to some degree interested in that, but I think, we do have sometimes a bit of that amnesia about our past and our history, and that you know, now that we've been here in Canada for a while, you know, maybe people's views on refugees has changed or something like that. And it shouldn't. We should realize this, you know, we should be sympathetic and helpful and realize that we all have struggles, and Mennonites have had struggles, and people helped us out. You know, I've seen quotes of what Canadians, you know, Canadians who already were living in Canada were saying about Mennonite refugees in the 1920s. And they were saying a lot of very horrible, racist and prejudiced things about, my grandfather or his generation anyways. And so those kind of, unfortunately, you sometimes see those kind of prejudices come back up in our society. And I think if we can put that into a little bit of perspective and realize that people have said that about us too, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just kind of having that empathy, that remembering that we came from that sort of place, or a lot of them.
Yeah.
A lot of Mennonites. And I mean, some traveled across the world. It's not just here in Manitoba and Canada. You know, you have Mennonites in the United States. You have them in South and Central America.
Yeah.
Which seems crazy.
Yeah, all over the place. Yeah. Yeah, I think in the 1870s, when the Mennonite sent delegates to Canada to come check it out, they sent 12 people, and 8 decided they didn't like the land. And they went to the U.S. and 4 decided to like encourage their people back in Europe to come here. But, you know, so yeah, there's Mennonites all over the place, and they move for various reasons, usually for religious reasons, but they moved all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So you're involved in writing satire. What is it about Mennonite culture that you find the humor in?
Wow. Yeah. You know, there is a sort of a stereotype about Mennonites that we're kind of stoic and don't really, you know, very serious and don't really laugh a lot, but you know, I don't think that that's really the case. I'm sure there's some people like that, but you know, I think Mennonites have always had a sense of humor, at least in certain situations and certain, I think you kind of had to, you know, you kind of have to use humor to kind of deal with or handle some of the situations that we've gone through in our history. I don't know if humor was sort of like a coping mechanism or something like that, but what do I've sort of rambled off the question there, but what do I find funny about Mennonites? I guess that was more like your question.
What do you find funny?
I mean, if you read the Daily Bonnet, you'll see that I find all sorts of things funny, and it's everything from food and accent to church things, you know, quirks. We're quirky, you know. We've always been kind of outsiders wherever we've lived. We've kind of been outsiders, and so I think maybe that gives us a kind of, we've developed quirks, and those are sort of fun to poke fun at, I guess.
I would say for myself how a lot of Mennonites, if you introduce yourself and you have a Mennonite last name, sometimes they'll go right into Low German, even if you don't speak it. You're like, hello? Sorry, I can't understand you.
They'll just assume that. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I've had that happen as well, too. And especially because of my website, people assume that I'm fluent in Plautdeutsch, you know, Low German. But, and so people will send me entire emails in Plautdeutsch, and it's hardly even a written language. You know, there are dictionaries, but it hasn't been even a written language for very long. So even people that speak it, a lot of them can't read it. So, mm-hmm. But people will assume that I know it and understand it. And I'm like, well, I do know more than a lot of people, but I'm not fluent by any means. If people speak very slow in context, I can understand it. But otherwise, it's sort of tough.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I knew it, actually.
Oh, I mean, it's definitely a part of my background that I wish I knew. Because they'll start talking, I'm like, I don't get it. I want to be part of the inside joke. Because I know for my grandparents and my parents, they used Low German as the secret code language.
Yeah, I've written satire, you know, I've written Daily Bondo articles about that, about Mennonite parents, you know, trying to make sure the kids don't find out about whatever, what they're getting for Christmas, or maybe more serious topics, you know, by using Low German. And they almost like, you know, I think my parents' generation, at least around here, some of them almost like deliberately didn't teach it to us. Maybe for that exact reason, but
yeah, and they get frustrated when you don't know it.
Yeah.
Like, why don't you know this? All by your...
I know that much.
So if you could pick one thing from Mennonite culture that you could share with everyone, what would it be?
Wow. I think I maybe sort of alluded to it before, but I think, you know, Mennonites are really have a real good sense of community, and we have our flaws. You know, I would definitely say that we have our flaws, and that's something we can talk about too if you want. But Mennonites, they may not seem, I don't want to generalize here, but it can seem not so friendly at first. But I think once you're sort of part of that community, there's a real sense of pulling together and drawing to and coming together and helping each other out. So I would say community is something that maybe others could pass on to others. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In terms of a potential negative, I would say stubborn, and I would put myself in that category. Stubborn as a mule. I know my whole family is that way. When we want to do something, you can't stop us.
that's probably true. Yeah. You know, maybe it's like, I mean, people joke about, since Mennonites are traditionally pacifist, that you know, since they never can use any form of physical violence, that they are passive aggressive. And maybe the stubbornness sort of comes from that. Like, you can't make me do that.
Maybe. I mean, even the food, I can never remember the names, but whenever I eat it, I was like, yep, this is distinctly Mennonite. Like, yeah. Farmer sausage, pierogies, and well, I can't remember it right now, but cream gravy.
Schmonfat,
yes.
Yeah. And all the food, you know, of course, all those foods that we in southern Manitoba anyways associate with as Mennonite foods are really things that from our history, you know, we lived in the Netherlands, we lived in Prussia, we lived in Russia, Ukraine, Latin America, and we've sort of took foods from all those places and adapted them and tweaked them, and then now those foods have become known as Mennonite foods, but really they're kind of variations on the food from other places. So it's kind of like we steal food.
Isn't it that cottage cheese pierogies are the way they are because it was cheaper and because a lot of Mennonites were poor when they first came over? So they just took the cheese curds and put it in the pierogies instead of like the good cheese or like bacon or potatoes like in Ukraine?
That could be. I'm sure that a lot of the recipes we have originated from necessity and things like that. So that could easily be. I haven't heard that exact story, but I know mostly when people think of pierogies from Ukraine, they think of, you know, at least in Western Canada, you think of, you know, cheese and potato pierogies. But the Mennonite pierogies or Vroniche are usually the cottage cheese variety, almost always. Or blueberry. Mm-hmm. You ever had that?
Oh, I've had blueberries, yeah, pierogies before.
Yeah, yep. Fruit-filled ones.
Or, what is it, Rolkuchen?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Rolkuchen. Yeah, that's like, how would you describe that? You know, it's
deep-fried bread, or like almost like a biscuit, or like a, kind of like a crisp.
I'm not sure the origin of it, if it originated in Europe or not, but it does kind of remind me of bannock a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. Like if you put a little bit of sugar on there. Like I know some people put honey on it, kind of like a wafer almost.
The classic thing is Rogers. Sorry, I keep having like you're probably hearing those beeps and buzzes from my computer, but
no worries.
The classic thing is Rogers golden syrup. That's what you put on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or Ronnie's sunflower seeds.
What's that?
Ronnie's sunflower seeds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Knoxote. Knoxote. Yeah, that literally means, I think, crack seed. Zot means seed and Kanak means crack. Crack seed.
Yeah. And I mean, it's almost like crack sometimes, the amount of sunflower seeds Mennonites can go through when you're at a harvest festival.
I know, and the pile that you leave below your lawn chair or there or whatever is somehow bigger than what you started. I don't know how that works, but...
Yeah, it just seems, it's an anomaly.
You can't stop, though. It is addicting. Like, once you start with the sunflower seeds,
it's really hard
to stop. And you eat it so much that your mouth gets, because they're so salty, right? That your mouth gets all dry or pickled or whatever. I don't know what the word is, but raw. Maybe that's a better word. But you still can't stop, you know, until the bag is done.
We'll join Kelly Botto after some more from Glenn Williams.
Now it's right for your children to unite. No more pain and suffering from the past. Whoa, 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 yes. Now it's right for your children to unite. No more pain and suffering from the past. Whoa, 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 yes. Many a man may put you down in your way. All you gotta do is hear what Jaja say. Don't let them deter you from the sacrifice you're gonna pay to Jah Lord in all your human rights. Whoa, 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 yes. Now it's right for your children to unite. No more pain and suffering from the past. Whoa, 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 yes. Now it's right for your children to unite. No more pain and suffering from the past. Whoa, 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 yes. To unite, cause it's your right. No more fussing, no more fights. Look within and you'll find the key. The breath of life is there for you and me. Whoa, 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 yes. Jaja children, Jaja children, Jaja children must unite. Whoa, 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 yes. Jaja children, Jaja children must unite. Whoa, 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 yes. Jaja children. I want you right now. Then I know that you are always around. Give me love in the morning, love in the evening too. Girl, I know you love me true. I don't wanna go away now. Gonna stay right here with you. Oh, girl, you're my lady. Whoa, girl, true, 'cause you know them blue. When I'm away from you, gotta keep you true. Girl, don't go away. Oh, girl, please stay. You're true, oh, true. Your love is true. Dub, 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 dub. Dub, 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 dub. Down the way where the nights are gay and the sun shines daily on the mountaintop, I took a trip on a sailing ship, and when I reached Jamaica, I made a stop. But I'm sad to say I'm on my way. I won't be back for many a days. My heart is down, my head is turning around. I had to leave a little girl in Kingston Town. Down at the market, you can hear ladies crying out, while on the heads of the bear. At Key Rice, all fish are nice, and the rum is fine any time of year. But I'm sad to say I'm on my way. I won't be back for many a days. My heart is down, my head is turning around. I had to leave my little girl in Kingston Town. Sounds of laughter everywhere, and the dancing girls swaying to and fro. I must declare my heart is there, though I've been from Maine to Mexico. But I'm sad to say I'm on my way. I won't be back for many a days. My heart is down, my head is turning around. In Kingston Town, well, I'm sad to say I'm on my way. I won't be back for many a days. My heart is down, my head is turning around. I had to leave a little girl in Kingston Town. Yellow bird, yeah. Here's an odd original, probably written a long time, about 10 years too.
Music has always been a part of bilingual singer-songwriter Kelly Botto's life. She combines African heritage, le chant en français, and American gospel to create a unique sound. Coming from West Africa, she never expected her style would come across as interesting here in Canada.
I was born in Côte d'Ivoire many years ago, I won't say. But my family lives there. My parents, my sisters came with me when I came to Canada in December 2007. And we came to originally to study. So I came and I went to the St. Boniface University. Mm-hmm. And yes, I did business and administration. That was the whole purpose of me traveling to Canada. And I left back home my brother and the rest of my family. And we are French. That's our first language. Mm-hmm. And I was always a singer, like in the sense that not a solo singer, but I was a choir person. I was in different choirs back home. That's where I learned to sing. And my mom also was in choir. So I guess she felt natural to push me in that direction. And I started singing and learning. And when I came here, I kept that passion. I mean, I continued singing. I was doing my studies and I was also volunteering in choirs to sing. Mm-hmm. And then I felt like music would always be a part of me, but then I was wondering if I could do more with it, like what could happen out of it. And I was encouraged by people to try. So I started attending a little coffee shop where there was you can share music, a poem, whatever you like. So I shared a song or two, and then someone approached me, was the leader of the organization Sanon, which is the organization that chaperones or supports francophone artists in Manitoba. Mm-hmm. And he said, I think you should apply for this contest that we have. And by the time I was so shy, I said, I don't know that I can sing. It was already a challenge for me to sing in front of five people that were sitting there. He said, no, you should still try. And so I tried. And from that point, winning that contest just launched a bunch of, a trajectory to where I am now. So it was sort of a three-step contest. You win the first one, then you go Vancouver for the second one, and then if you win the Vancouver, you go to Quebec, which I did. So I ended up in a short amount of time going to Quebec, and I felt like everything was so fast because I was new to Canada, sort of. Mm. And I was just trying to get a sense of the music community and who are the people. So I felt like I wasn't established properly yet, but at the same time, I was happy to get to know the musical community this way because I met a lot of people. I had lots of workshops because every contest was offering us workshops. So I got trained at the same time how to write better songs. Mm-hmm. And I sort of worked on my first ever songs with these contests. So I got a good feedback. And so it was a really like a big learning process. And then after that, I got a chance to be in a band where I was backup singer, and it was called the Seaweed Band, funny name. Anyway, it's a big band. I think they're still together. It's a band. The member, the owner, the founder, it was a member of our First Nation community. Mm-hmm. So it was such an honor because I got to learn. I went with them tour. There was a big band. So for me, it was the first experience like that touring. And we went in some reserves. We went in like different stages. So all that happened around the same time. So it was such a big learning experience for me. And mm-hmm. Yeah, like I could, it's going to take me days if I wanted to explain every step.
Of course, of course.
But that's sort of the beginning. That was the beginning for me.
It really sounded like a domino effect where all the pieces just kept falling into place to get you to where you are.
It was so interesting and surprised because I thought because I was coming from West Africa, I guess I wasn't expecting that my music or maybe my style would come across as something interesting, like to the extent that people would like say, can you, do you want to be a backup singer and then let's tour? You know, I thought, oh, maybe it's going to be something, it's going to be slow and, you know, it's going to start slowly. I'm going to be this and in the back there. And then, you know, maybe after a few years, I'm going to do this. So I was surprised how fast everything went. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it was a lot of stress for me to measure up. And it's very strange how the more opportunity you have, the more you doubt yourself. I don't know how that makes sense, but it almost feels like you're stressing because more people want to hear your story. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but that's how I feel.
I think some people, I think it's called imposter syndrome, that you don't recognize your own success or your own success doesn't feel earned to you. So the more you get, it just feels kind of alien.
Yeah, I guess. But it just really felt strange. But I was lucky that the people that I met along the way were very nice to me. Like I was blessed that way. It was nice people every time. Everybody wanted to help. Everybody felt like, oh, I love what you do, so let me help you. So it was like sort of angels, if you want, on the way, because I didn't pay them anything. I didn't give them anything. They were just like, let me help you. And these were the people that made it possible for me to get to this point, in a sense.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about your music and your style. Do you think your background has been a major component to your musical process, as well as, you know, just music in general? Can there be music without culture or influence from your past?
I think it's possible to do your music without it if you don't want it to transpire. Like if you want to really do something completely different, then you know you could, right? But me personally, I'm basing it on my message and what I'm trying to accomplish. So for me, it made sense to keep my culture, to keep that, because that's where I learned. Like if, let's say I wasn't a singer back home, maybe I would have been different today if I started music here altogether, like singing and all. Maybe I wouldn't have that influence that much. Mm-hmm. But because I grew up in this and my mother was singing, it was almost impossible to not have it reflect in my style. So even back home, I was still listening to singers like Mariah Carey and Whitney Houston and Celine Dion. So in West Africa, we still had that influence, right? Mm-hmm. Like we were listening to foreign music, and they were big there back home. It was on top of having our own music there, of course, we had like these influences, so we knew. And vocally, I was always attracted to their ability, so that's what I was using to train myself in American gospel as well. And there was also a little bit of European music, French music, music from France that I was listening to. So everything sort of became a mashup of all. But I wanted to have that distinct African sound. And I felt like even if I'm going to sing like, I don't know, Celine Dion or Mariah Carey or whatever vocally, I still want to have something from my culture. And for me, that was the African sound, meaning African instruments, like percussions, mm-hmm. Djembe. I played myself djembe a little bit back home. So balafon, I don't know if in English it's the same name, but in French it's called balafon. It's like a big, it looks like a piano, but it's not. Maybe it's similar to a xylophone. I don't know.
Maybe. I'd have to look it up. Oh, yeah.
That would be the like visual.
It looks kind of like it.
It looks like it. And the kora and all kinds of instrument from my home. So I always incorporate that in what I do. And I felt like that's a way to represent who I am. And I think the big message that I had, because I talked about it all depend on what's your message, right? Mm-hmm. The style you're going to take. And my message for me was to be able to embrace where I am for sure, but to always represent my culture, because I felt like Africa wasn't always well presented. When I came here, it was a little bit, I was a little bit disappointed of the image that was shown, in the sense that it was the only portrait mm-hmm. that was given, and it was malnutrition, it was war, it was poverty, it was abandoned kids and dirt, you know, and there was like, it's a reality in every country. I'm sure, you know, everywhere you go, there is the things that we want to improve. There is difficult things. There is families that are broken. There is all that. Mm-hmm. But there is also the side of the culture, the beauty, the people, the story. And none of that was shown here. And I felt a bit sad, and I felt compelled to try to change that mm-hmm. if I can with my music. Yeah.
And like, Africa is so large with like thousands of cultures there. It's not this just a monocultural exactly. thing.
Exactly. And it's what is shown. And even meeting my husband, he didn't know better. Like he apologized after, and I said, it's okay. Like, it's not your fault. He said, all I saw on TV was this. And he said, I apologize. For me, I thought, you know, that's what there is to it, you know, until I met you and started to want to understand more and go online and look up countries and see, you know, geography and cultures and all this. And he saw that, okay, there is other things there, like, and there's different countries, like you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not a monolith. There's so no. much diversity. So let's move on to your new album that you recently released.
Yeah.
How about, tell me a little bit about that and what inspired you to make it and kind of the message in that one.
So I feel like this new album, it's called Hater, and it's like, if you want phase two of the first, I guess a mini album. The first EP that I did was with six songs. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't completely an album, but people use it as an introduction in the industry. That's what I was told. If you want to, you know, see how people react to you, your music, you just do a small sample and see how it goes. So I feel like the second album is building on the first, because the first was my first experience here, and I was talking about back home, I was talking about where I came from and my transition. So it was like in between, that's what I called it, entre deux. Mm-hmm. And this one is called Ether, and I felt like I can continue to build on where I come from, because I have a song in the album that's a song talking about Africa again. And I think there'll always be that. And then there's that African sound again, it comes. We have a richness of different sounds and instruments that we are using in this album. In the first album, I didn't have enough money to get all the instruments I wanted. So in this one, I was able to go a step further. So the inspiration behind it was, I would say, a song that unifies, sorry, an album that unifies, because the main song is talking about Earth, so planet Terre, and how we should take care of it. But I think it goes beyond that. It's talking about the fact that we live on the planet and we are all connected because of that. Even if we are from different countries, different skin colors, etc., different looks, we are together on the same one planet. And that's what connects us. That's what, if we take care of the planet, then in a way we are taking care of each other. And that was the main element that helped me build the album.
Amazing. Yeah, I mean, that's so appropriate. Just with the message of, like, Canada, multiculturalism. Like, we're all connected here. And, like, the differences, they're meant to be celebrated, not to be feared or judged. That, yeah, everyone is beautiful in their own way.
I think so. And you know, I can understand that it can be a challenge, right, to... when you don't know another culture, another person, even just people within Canada who are Canadian, right? Sometimes it's hard to approach someone you don't know, right? So if we go even beyond that, someone who comes from a different country, it's even a bigger challenge, because you have ideas, you have a conception in your head that, okay, maybe this person is coming from a very, like, hurtful past, a war, or maybe poverty. So sometimes you approach with a certain lens, and I think that's creating a barrier. But if we approach each other as people first, you know, like I said, living on the same planet, then it's a different approach. It's more embracing. It's more like, what can you contribute? What are you bringing me? You know, what can I learn from you, right? And then same way here. And that's what helped me as an immigrant. It was hard when I came here. I felt like I didn't know what I was contributing, because I felt like people saw me through a certain lens and they were imagining stories of my past or where I came from. And that really blocked me. And I didn't feel comfortable approaching people because I felt like I always had to explain myself. No, I'm not coming from this place. No, it's not that, you know, I came for studies. Mm-hmm. And at some point I felt like, okay, I was stereotyped.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was like, okay, this is where, so I was a bit frustrated, but I learned, you know, over time. And I feel like that's probably why I'm pushing that message, is that you just have to see people as people, you know, first.
Of course. So in your success, you know, you're building this music career. How do you stay connected? I mean, you've mentioned it a little bit about staying connected with your culture, but, you know, how do you stay connected to your roots, where you came from, your family, friends, as you're going through this success, you're releasing music?
Oh, yeah. You keep saying success. Thank you. I don't know even if I can say it is. I guess it is a success, because it depends how you define it. It is a success for me, you're right, in the sense that if I compare to where I started, I accomplished a lot. So I keep in touch with my family. We network is difficult because back home it's not as efficient. So it's sometimes we call each other, you know, with the and some the apps. You have WhatsApp, you have different apps there, Viber. So I call my mom every week, and then we see each other like that online. And my family, my brother.
I mean, the time zone probably doesn't help either.
It doesn't help. There's like 6 hours, so sometimes she calls, but I'm working, or I call, she's sleeping. They're sleeping over there. But I really try to keep in touch. And I cannot go there and visit every year. That's sad because it's just too expensive. Mm-hmm. But I think we keep in touch like that, calling each other and also friends. We have a community here of people, newcomers, mm-hmm. and friends, and we keep in touch. We celebrate our independence. This year we couldn't do that, unfortunately, but every year we try really to gather and celebrate, you know, our country and things like that.
Ah, that's amazing. Is there anything else that you would like to share, or a story you'd like to share at the moment?
Well, I would like to thank, you know, the community, the Francophone community here for the support, because I wouldn't be where I am without the support of the community. It's because people want to hear you. They want to hear your music, what you have to say, that you sort of, it carries you, right? Like it, because you have all these voices and all these people wanted to know you and what you have to say, that really supports you. So I wanted to thank the community for that. And I wanted to thank the sponsors for the album, the government of Canada, Musique Action, and Manitoba Film and Music for the support, and my family, and everybody's going to be listening to this. Just a big message of hope, and keep your head up high. I know it's very hard, mm-hmm. but I know that we are stronger than these challenges, and we're gonna get through it, and we're gonna be in the concert room again. We're gonna, you know, be able to go in the restaurants and not worry about whether or not the next person is 10 feet, you know, 2 feet away and stuff like that. We're going to be able to get through it. So I just wanted to encourage everybody, and immigrants who are coming also newly to Canada. And this time, I don't know if anybody is able to come, but if there is, I just really give them a big virtual hug and to hold on, and we'll be able to meet again. Life as it was, if not better.
Yeah.
Not better.
We'll have that kind of that strength of a character that's developed.
Yeah. And people could go on my website, kellybado.com. I'm sure you're going to have it up, and keep in touch. If they need anything, they can email me. I respond pretty quick. And I've made friends like that, people emailing me and saying, hey, how are you doing? And then we talk. I say I'm good, and also I'm very I try to connect with people, so if people visit there, they can email me anytime.
Interested in more of U-Talk? Check out previous episodes and additional content on U-Multicultural's website. You're listening to UMFM 101.5. I'm Ryan Funk. This was U-Talk, and have yourself a good one.
Today, that's why I mention, I call out your name, all thoughts coming back to you, trying to ease the pain.
walking around thinking about you. Baby, can you help me? Can you help me now? Feeling sad and blue, lost without you. I still adore you like yesterday. Time waits for no one, some scrambling in haste. I'll just hold on, love will find a way. Baby, can you help me? Can you help me now? I don't know what to do, walking around thinking about you. Baby, can you help? Lost without you.